Hi everyone, today we're going to talk about a book called How to Lie with Statistics by Daryl Huff. We're going to begin with describing the significance of this subject and why we think it should be taught in every high school. In my opinion, I think it's one of the most broad and interesting subject ever because it helps us analyze like what is happening in the world around us and things like weather forecast or medical studies and pretty much everything around us. Has something to do with statistics, and I think students in high school, they should have an option between choosing statistics or calculus, because not everyone wants to go into a medical field or a STEM field.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like statistics is that kind of math that like helps us like interpret the world around us, instead of like, for example, calculus, just like, you know, I don't know. There are different maths. I wouldn't say one is better than the other or we need one more than the other, but statistics is definitely something that every student should definitely learn. I think what you're saying is, like, statistics is more of something we need in, like, our daily lives to make better decisions, and that's what the whole book is about, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, making better decisions, interpreting what we hear and what we see in better ways.
Yeah, one of the main reasons why I enjoyed this book is because the author, he really focuses on the facts and figures that we see every day and pretty much everywhere. Like, he goes from problems that happen during study collection, and even the presentation of data, like, it's like he's done a great job.
Yeah, I think one of the most interesting things he talked about is like how we interpret like averages, and like average is a word like we hear everywhere, like, you know, in political debates and commercials and like newspapers, literally like everywhere, and we just don't stop to think about what actually average means, because like when you take statistics class, there are like literally like three types of averages. Mm-hmm. Right, it's either the mean, the median, or the mode, and they give you different types of information, and like, you know, when somebody says average of something, doesn't necessarily mean that they're giving us the information that we actually need to know in order for us to make a decision about that particular thing.
One thing that I noticed is that I think the book was written in 50s or 60s because there are some outdated examples. But the way the author wrote the book, you can like make a solid conclusion and understand what he's trying to say. I think all these surveys, they don't really tell you everything, because like if you go on a website, like soccer website, and if you see a poll and they say like who's gonna win the championship or who's gonna win the World Cup, I think there's always a bias in that too, because people who only have the access of internet, only they can do the polling and like vote. Not everyone has the access to internet. So like there's the bias there too. And also there's one thing that example that an average American brushes their teeth twice a day. So it makes me wonder like how that's true, and how can you trust the sources, and vice versa.
I feel like, well, yeah, I guess I got that out of it too, but I feel like what I got more out of the book and also out of statistics class is learn how to question the world around you. You know, it's like, I feel like one of the things that statistics definitely teaches you is like questioning things and not really believing everything you hear or see unless you have all of the pieces you need.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I would recommend this book to pretty much everyone, because like it has so much information in it and it's so useful. And I think in today's world, like everyone has access to internet and they can like find this book online and they can benefit from this and know what stats is all about.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I think you don't need to be in statistics class in order to read this book.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, he uses pretty simple language, and he, even though he uses words that are like math words that are used in just in stats, but he also like explains those words, so anyone can pretty much understand it.
Yeah, that's true. Hi everyone, we're back. Today we're gonna talk about chapter 4, 5, and 6. So basically in chapter 4, the author says that a difference is a difference, and if it makes a difference. He basically explores the concepts of error and ranges to show that at times difference between numbers are made to mean more than they do. And
it's interesting because he talked about like how he gave an example of like a graph when like there were like all of the numbers you needed to know were shown on the graph, and then the same graph when like the numbers weren't shown, and how like there's this illusion of like the percentage or whatever was like increasing by like much more than it actually was, because the line was just like going up. So you actually, you know, perceive the idea in a different way when like you're not given all of the pieces of information that you need to know. And I feel like, you know, that's I guess that would be a smart way to lie to people. Uh-huh. Like, and I think we are being lied to that way in like all kinds of fields, like I don't know, business, politics, like if like and for example, like they show you a graph of like how many more people have jobs or whatever, mm-hmm. and they don't really show you the detailed information, meaning like the exact numbers. They just show you like the graph. You're gonna be like, whoa, like so many more people have jobs in like Obama's administration in comparison to like, I don't know, Truman's administration or whatever.
Yeah, that's true.
But then like, well, I don't know about that, but I guess the point is, like, when you don't have, like, all of the information you need, like, you're just gonna make bad decisions.
Yeah, and on top of that, in chapter 4, he says that, like, sometimes the result of a sample, they're, like, very close together, and the difference between them are, like, it's meaningless, and because the range of the probable error may be like greater than the difference between results. And he also like talks about one example of measuring the size of a cornfield, and tells us that like each test comes with a percentage of probable error, and while doing any comparison between two may come with like very small differences. And the measure wouldn't give a precise figure, rather gives us a range with a probable error. And do you remember the example of Yale? Like, he talks about like how like he makes a generalization that
that was like in the first chapter.
It's also in chapter 4.
Oh.
That like a student who would attend Yale would make like $25,000 per year.
Right.
Yeah, and the fact that the income of a specific group cannot be known specifically. I mean, like even if the income is so, there must be like any other sources of income, like rather than just a job. Like I don't think that one specific, like they make $25,000 per year. That I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
Like they have like more like more ways of making money, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I totally agree with you and the author. And I guess with that, we go to talking about bias when, you know, doing experiments or, like, deciding what kind of sample you want to use or whatever. And the author, you know, mentioned how, like, the pure random sample is the best way, you know, to get, like, the least amount of errors in your results. However, you know, it costs a lot of money. So that's why, like, a lot of people wouldn't use that because they don't have, you know, the finances to do that. So they do a clustered sample instead. And I guess another problem also when, like, choosing samples is, like, as I said, being, like, biased or whatever. And another example he gave was, like, that woman who wanted to do some experiment that I don't remember exactly, but then she wanted to, like, ask people at a train station or something, because she thought, like, everyone would be included and, you know, there wouldn't be people who wouldn't be there. But the author mentioned how, like, women with, like, the little children or whatever wouldn't be there. Therefore, that group wouldn't be represented, you know?
Uh-huh.
So I guess the problem with that is also, like, not representing everyone.
For our old podcast, Mr. Maz, he made a comment and, like, gave us an article. And it says, like, how to lie with data visualization.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically, like, talks about, like errors in the data and stuff like that. And I think the article is, like, really interesting. It makes you wonder, like, why stuff like this matter and why it should be taught in high schools, because, like, we need to understand, like, these, like, some of those data are making us fool, you know? Like, you don't actually see that. You don't see the actual picture, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, throughout the book, like, even mentioning, like, the other chapters we talked about before, you know, and we said this in, like, our previous podcast, like, statistics is, now I think it's, like, a very, very important thing to be, you know, to have knowledge about, because now that I'm thinking about it, it's, like, we're lied to everywhere. It's, like, media, politics, business, economy.
Yeah, it's pretty much everywhere.
Maybe school. I don't know.
Yeah, and also there's a quote in the book, and Mr. Maz also talked about it, like, a river cannot rise above its source. And
sometimes it can.
to me, I guess it means, like, you can't get something more out of what you already have, and which is not true.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, like, we're able to get away, like, more information than we've been told, you know? And the saying, like, a river cannot rise above its source, it can be true all the time, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I don't know.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about chapter 5. All right. So in chapter 5, the author says that the statistics it's like merely a number, and most people are bound to, like, find them boring, you know? So if you plot all the numbers and against the two axes of a graph, the result would be a diagram, you know, a line or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, question arises over here, like, how do you make that graph more interesting and more appealing?
I don't know. I guess because, like, graphs are visual, I wouldn't really kind of relate to that, sort of. I don't know, just because, like, they're, like, visual, I don't know, like, you know, because
yeah,
I have visual disability and stuff, like, I don't really.
Yeah, you're true. I think, like, it makes us easy for anyone to look at the pictures and understand what's going on, and, like, it makes the numbers, like, comprehensive and makes us easy for us to, like, understand what's going on in the problem or in the situation. And the author also talks about, like how some people make graphs more appealing, like by, like, they would cut down half of the lower portion of the graph and make it, like, interesting.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. Like, you would give less information than, like, what you should know, only to, like, convince you of whatever idea they want to convince you with, you know? That's the exact same thing I was saying earlier, but yeah.
Yeah, and in chapter 6, it's basically, I think it's connected with the previous chapter, because the focus of this chapter is, like one-dimensional picture, and, like, basically talking about graph or a table.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in this chapter, the author, like, he points out, like, how the tricks are used to manipulate the report or give a desired direction and stuff like that.
Right. And then he goes to talk about, like, correlation and stuff.
Yeah. That's it.
Should we stop here?
Hi, everyone. In this podcast, we'll talk about the final chapters 7, 8, and 9. So basically, the author begins the chapter by saying that if you can't prove something, then you have to demonstrate something else and pretend that they're the same thing. And that's what basically he talks about in chapter 9, that the semi-attached figure is a tool that can be used to cope with any situation that is not much in favor of the presenter. For example, the study about the racial status and employment status of Negroes, like black people, and hardly provides any help to us to understand the situation and vice versa. And all the examples, they are told partially, and which is partially true, but not the whole story begins a different meaning. Like each story is like not true and has a different meaning.
Yeah, I guess what I mostly get out of the chapters is like when he started talking about when he said, like, if B causes A, then...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if B follows A, then A causes B or something like that. I don't really...
No, that's chapter 8.
Oh, well, yeah. I guess that's, like, the most thing I remember out of the reading. You know, just because it's, like, part of our daily lives. For example, he gave the example of, like... you know, cigarette smokers and low grades in college or whatever. And the hypothesis is, smoking cigarettes causes, you know, to get, like, low grades in school. But although that kind of makes sense, I mean, people would believe that because they want to believe that. It's, like, they're subconsciously, like, in favor of believing that. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I guess his argument is, like, it doesn't mean, like, if things are just, like, increasing together or decreasing at the same time, doesn't mean there is necessarily, like, a strong correlation. Because then he made an argument about, like, what if it was the other way around? You know, maybe because they have very low grades, they smoke instead of, like, you know... taking drugs or drinking or whatever
about the exact same thing in chapter 8. Like, there are four types of correlation, like correlation by chance and correlation where it's impossible to detect, like, whether A is causing B or otherwise, and then the correlation where neither A nor B is, like, causing each other.
Yeah, where there's, like, a third factor.
Yeah, that's true.
There's another one, another type that I don't remember.
And in the second last chapter, the author also, like, he basically, like, introduces the process of statisticulation rather than calling it, like, manipulation. Like, he talks about, like, deception through the decimals and through percentages and by adding things that don't really add up and through percentiles and even averages. And he says that the percentages, like, it's a tool to make confusion. And he, like, says that to figure out itself, the sample size, like, if the sample size is too small, like, you should avoid using a decimal places.
Yeah, because, like, for example, if, like, they had, like, a very small sample and they would use a percentage and the percentage would be like 90%, you know, or whatever. They would, like, again, like, convince you of the idea that they want to convince you of.
Like, it can never give you, like, any idea of the actual value or figure. There's one example in the book, like, a rabbit sandwich. I don't know if you read them. In that chapter, states that like how the percentage you can present a whole different picture by saying, like, this percentage represent this and stuff like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it can like portray a whole different thing.
Right.
And in the final chapter, he talks about like how to tell if the data is, like, credible. Like, he gives us five questions that can tell us if it's true or no. Like, number one, who says who, and second one is, like, how does they know, and third one is, like, what's missing, fourth, Did someone like change the subject? And fifth is like, did it make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. Like, I feel like the five questions just like summarize the whole like thing that he has been talking about through like the whole book. Is like, you know, the first questions. I mean, the very first question is about like whether the person is biased or not, and then the second question is like, how do they know? So like trying to figure out like all of the information like about like the other chapters about like sampling and stuff. So I'm just saying like, you know, these five questions, like it's like the summary of the book.
Yeah.
Almost.
Like the like if say like did someone change the subject? There's pretty much bias in it. Like
mm-hmm.
Like how do they know? Like how do you trust the source? You know,
right.
If it's credible, like who, like it was there like any organization who collected the data, and like was there any bias? And the last one is like, does it actually make sense? Like if you're like some data, like they don't really make sense, you know?
Yeah, but I guess then I would argue, I mean, this has nothing to do with stats, but like to the does it make sense question, I feel like once we get to like like the psychological perspective, sometimes we want to make sense of things just because that's what we want the reality to become. Which I think I know is like a lot of confusion and like out of topic, but you know, just to
put yeah. So you're saying like you have your own bias in it. Like
yeah.
if you want like make something that's not true, like make that reality.
Yes. Yes, that's sort of what I'm saying. Also, what I'm saying is, yeah, that is kind of what I'm saying. But I guess another thing I'm trying to say is, like, sometimes we don't re-question a certain thing only because, again, like, subconsciously, we just want to believe that that is the truth, you know? And we don't want to challenge it because it's, like, we wouldn't like the true truth.
And most of the time, that's wrong, you know? That's not
yeah,
the truth.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So.
Psychology is fun. Or not.
This is just a follow-up on our last podcast to discuss some things that we didn't get a chance to talk about. We have answered some of Mr. Mias's comments, but there are one or two that we didn't get a chance to get to. But before I get to that, I wanted to talk a little more about the author's points and arguments about correlation. So he gave so many interesting examples about how sometimes we believe that there is a cause and effect when there actually isn't. And we just believe that only because we like to believe that. And so, for example, we mentioned this on our last podcast, but I think it's really, really interesting. For example, when he talked about the cigarette smokers and bad grades in school, and whether cigarette smoking actually causes bad grades in school or whether it's the other way around. I think this one also reminds me of how there are so many articles that talk about how in 2016 there are so much more people who are killed in the sea or oceans by sharks. And I think most of us would believe that, but the reality is that it's not that more sharks are biting more people. It just means that more people are actually going to oceans now. And he gave a very, very similar example. It's the one that talks about planes and how people believe that in modern days, much more people are killed by plane crashes. When in truth, in 2016, a lot more people take planes than, you know, in the 1990s or whatever. So yeah, I just wanted to say that because I didn't get a chance to say that on the last podcast. But yeah, so one of Mr. Miles' comments that we didn't get to was the one that says to choose a quote from the cover and talk about it. And a quote that I really, really like is the one that says that it ain't the things that we don't know that get us in trouble, but the things that we know that ain't so. I feel like this quote can be interpreted in so many different ways. For me, I think what it's saying is that it's not the things that we ignore that hurt us, because we ignore those things and they can't hurt us, but it's rather the things that we think we know, but the truth is we don't know those things. It's only because we think we know them. Overall, I feel like the main thing I get out of this book, as I most likely said before, is that we should question everything around us instead of just believing. And I think this quote is saying that because we believe we know things, that prevents us from questioning the truth and the reality of those things. Therefore, you know, that would hurt us or get us in trouble. So yeah, another thing is the article. We've talked about that a little bit. But yeah, it's very interesting. In the book also, the author talked about how people can be convinced of a certain idea only if the graph or the visual display is a little bit modified. And in the article, it says that the most common way to do that is to modify the y-axis by making the range seem a lot larger than it really is. So that way the person who looks at it would think or see that the line of the graph or whatever is increasing, and therefore the person who sees that would believe that there is a big change happening on whatever that graph is about. Yeah, I think that's it. Overall, the book is very interesting, as I said a million times before. And it is one of those books that makes you think that even the reality is not real, or if there is even a reality, because it almost saying like everything around us is a lie and we have to investigate the truth of every single thing we hear and see for ourselves instead of just believing what we're told.